Welcome to episode 196 of The Lab. I'm Brad Barton.
I'm Phil Barton.
This time, I'm certain there will be links on the show page today with more information, which you can find by visiting thelabwithbrad.com.
It's a guarantee.
Yeah, I'm certain this time. I even have them sort of arranged from most easily understood, superficial to, well, you know, just absolutely scientific and covered in jargon.
Yeah,
I guess, you know, I'm not an expert on any of these topics we cover by any means. I am just an enthusiastic and somewhat obsessive amateur.
Mm-hmm.
And what do? I grab these papers and I spend half my time looking up terms. What does that mean? And you can't just, you can kind of get it by context, but that will fool you and lead you astray. So.
Every discipline has a language.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there's a whole bunch of new vocabulary. And I've never looked at pregnancy and fetal development. You know, I was looking up something. I was trying to figure out the difference between an embryo and a fetus. I thought there was some scientific, technical transition from one to the other.
Like some certain number of cells? Or
all I can find is that end of week 8 post-conception. Start of week 9, it changes from an embryo to a fetus. Apparently, it's just the amount of time that has passed.
Mm-hmm.
I did actually find some links for the last episode, which are on that show page. And speaking of the last episode, folks, you really kind of need to listen to that one in order to get this one.
Oh, here we go. <You're getting more
laughs> because it gets even more complicated.
Of course it does.
Of course it does. So actual production of neurons starts on day 42 post-conception, which is suspiciously specific. They don't even say about day 42. This particular paper said day 42.
I mean, what about, okay, well, whatever, day 42.
Yeah, a little Douglas Adams nod there.
I knew it, yes, right?
Yeah. And about halfway through the pregnancy, at about day 108 or so, most of the neurons that the baby needs have been produced.
See, it's like, it's a long time, sort of, but it's not that long.
No.
Like, yeast cells in that much time, they could go crazy.
Yeah, but generally speaking, things like bread and beer are not known for being especially brainy. So there are two main categories of cells in your brain. There is the much vaunted neuron.
Yes.
Which we covered in detail a couple of episodes back.
It's the only one I know.
And then you've got the glial cells.
I've heard that term. I didn't know they were in your brain.
They are in your brain. There are four different types in your brain. The only two I remember are the astrocytes and the oligodendrocytes. We'll cover them in more detail in later episodes.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
So, you know, four different types of glial cells and roughly 5,000 different types of neurons. So let's get started. No.
No.
We'll be here for the next 2 weeks. And then there's the Perkins cell.
You will suffer.
But they travel from where they are formed to where they will live. And then somehow magically figure out which one of those thousands of different kinds of neurons they're going to be. Or which one of the four different kinds of glial cells. So how does all this happen? Blink, blink.
Who knows? Wait, well, you do.
Actually, I was kind of surprised. I expected to see a lot of, we don't quite get this yet. Uh-huh. And yeah, there's plenty of that going on, but there is more understood than I expected there to be. And neuroscience and neuroanatomy have both come a long way just within our lifetime.
Yeah, yeah, we're making real progress. Not, yeah, even understanding genes and...
genes and proteins and enzymes. What's
it called? All the microscopic study of stuff. Study of life.
I think you're talking about molecular biology.
Yes.
There we go. See, it's got molecule in the name. So when the first cell, conception has happened. It has all 23 chromosomes. It's ready to make baby.
Okay.
That cell can produce any and all types of tissue and cells that are in your body. It has to if you're going to get a baby out of the deal.
Mm-hmm.
But as these cells divide and change into the different types, they can't go back.
Mm.
Generally speaking, they call it fate restriction.
Fate restriction. Wow.
Yeah.
I like the name.
You. Yeah. This happens with what they call neural stem cells as well. They're still stem cells in that they can be any cell in your nervous system, neuron or glial.
Ah, but their fate is restricted.
Yeah, but they're not going to turn into a stomach, for example.
Okay.
So how does this happen? This is through the magic of transcription factors.
Okay.
It is estimated that there are 2,600 of these. These are proteins mm-hmm. that find a particular spot in your DNA and bind to it.
Okay.
And then they either facilitate or inhibit the RNA binding to the DNA, the messenger molecule,
mm-hmm.
that then goes to the, what do you call them, ribosomes, mm-hmm. to make the actual protein. So cool. These little transcription factors are like on and off switches. Or it's probably better to call them rheostats. Turn it up okay. or turn it down.
Okay, gotcha.
And like I said, there's about 2,600 of these in the human genome. They're not entirely certain whether or not all 2,600 get used. Some of them might only happen under certain environmental conditions.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really beautiful design here. There are genes that only get expressed if you happen to live somewhere very hot,
ooh.
For example, mm-hmm. and other genes that only get expressed if you live somewhere very cold. Similar things for the amount of oxygen or the amount of exercise you're doing. There's a lot of wiggle room or things you can do that are adaptive over the course of your lifetime.
So your genes are expressed differently even as an adult if you live in different climates?
Different climates, different stresses. Different diets.
Oh, cool. So that's why I'm fat right now.
I wasn't going to say. But early on in the process, most of the regulation for what other proteins are going to be made are other transcription factors. Mm-hmm. Because cells are turning, their fate is getting restricted step by step.
Interesting.
Yes, it's a sort of complicated cascade of chemical signals that go back and forth. And a lot of what the cells use to figure out what kind of cell they're going to be is what the adjacent cells happen to be.
Okay.
For example, early on in the process, that primitive streak forms.
Oh, yeah. I like that thing.
At least in chicken embryos, because they're easier to study than human babies.
Okay.
They found that the hypoblast, the part that will turn into the embryonic sac and umbilical cord and part of the placenta, it isn't any of those things yet. It's just a layer of goo. But if they remove that, the chicken embryo will make more than one streak.
Weird.
Yeah, so it seems like, at least in chickens, whichever cells happen to make the streak first, they win. After that, that other layer suppresses further streak formation.
Okay.
It was a good thing. You know, I end up like with four or five spines all at odd angles to each other.
There's lizards with more than one head.
Well, actually, that happens in that happens to mammals and humans and birds. Oh, my. Almost Halloween. We talk about something freakish. So, when that streak forms, and you start growing the neural plate that we talked about last time, mm-hmm. the cells are moving, sort of collect from front to back. They call it rostral to caudal.
That's what they do.
That's what they do. Well, you know, terminology. Rostral meaning towards the nose or towards the head. Not every critter has a nose. Like for a shark, it's just that pointy end. And caudal would mean towards the tail. Now, as adults, we humans generally don't have a tail, but during the early stages, we do.
Why not?
And later, it gets absorbed, ends up turning into the caucus. Usually, yes. During these episodes, I'm describing things as if everything goes well.
Okay. Let's try to stay down that path.
Yeah, it's complicated enough without talking about all the things that can go wrong. But as they arrive, depending upon where they land and how soon they land, various transcription factors already get activated. So there's already some fate restriction going on, so that the stuff that is more rostral, more towards the head, will end up producing precursors for your brain. And the stuff towards the tail, and there is a tail at the time, ends up turning into your spinal cord and peripheral nervous system.
Okay.
So
things are organizing themselves.
Yeah, that's hopefully. Now we have billions of neurons.
Yes, we do.
Since that one person whose name escapes me at the moment figured out a method of counting neurons, we've discovered we have roughly 86 billion of them.
And they're all necessary.
We'll get into programmed cell death later. But yeah, we need those things.
Yeah.
There are not anywhere near that many cells at first. So the first thing that happens, especially for the brain, is you need to get a pool of cells, neural stem cells, that divide like crazy. We're going to need a lot more of these.
Okay, we've got everything sort of organized, ready, set, multiply.
Yep. And eventually, you get, they call it symmetrical production at first, since you've got a cell that can divide, and it divides into two cells that can also divide. But eventually, that changes into an asymmetrical form of production, where one cell can still divide, it still hangs out in that pool of progenitor cells. The other one turns into a neuron.
An actual neuron.
Well, yes-ish.
An official almost.
It can't divide anymore. Okay. You're also ending up with glial cells from this process, and those can still divide and will continue to divide even when they're migrating to where they're going to live and even into adulthood. Neurons, as far as we can tell, do not. There is some production of neurons during adulthood, especially in the hippocampus, and of all places, the olfactory bulb.
Our noseness?
Where we smell things, or where we process the sense of smell, yes.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah, it might have something to do with why scents can be so evocative of memories.
Oh, yeah. You want to remember something really clearly. If you can remember the smell of the room you were in, it'll bring it right back.
Yeah, it's one heck of a cue. I have seen some papers that suggest that there may be continued adult neural generation in other areas of the brain, the basal ganglia, the cerebellum, even the cerebral cortex. By the time we get to those areas, we pretty much might as well say the whole brain.
Mm-hmm.
But the jury's still out on that. We're certain about the olfactory bulb and the hippocampus.
Interesting. What's the hippocampus do?
That is involved in encoding memories and spatial reasoning and some emotional processing.
It's kind of a mutt.
mostly it's involved in memory. And it depends upon which side of the brain you're talking about. The right hippocampus has a lot to do with spatial reasoning. In fact, London cabbies.
Yeah.
Despite the existence of Google Maps, it may have changed by now. But they had to learn all the streets. They had to take a test. And they found that their right hippocampus tends to be enlarged as compared to the general population. Just because they were working their spatial memory so hard.
Neat.
Again, I think adapting to what you're doing is what our body does.
Mine has to withered and died by now.
I don't know where I am.
I'm in my room right now. Yeah, anyways.
So when the first neurons show up, they have to travel from where they were born to where they will live. And at first, this is a very short distance. We're talking millimeters. Mm-hmm. So what they do is they grow out a chunk of themselves. This is not a dendrite or an axon. It's part of the actual cell body.
Oh, okay.
A little projection that grows out until it hits sort of the outer wall of the chamber where that part of the brain is being grown. It attaches itself to that outer wall. And then inside of it, the nucleus of the cell is dragged forward.
So a bit of the cell reaches out, goes dibs.
Yep. And then it will shorten and thicken, but it remains attached to the outside. And the first neurons to travel are temporary.
Oh.
They are there to help other neurons figure out where they're going.
Okay, building a ladder. Gotcha.
Yeah, ladder, scaffold, call it what you will.
Traffic light. Traffic
cop. Well, what they call it is the preplate.
Preplate. Cool.
Because later neurons are going to come along and subdivide that layer into the marginal zone and the subplate.
Okay.
And these are all temporary structures. By the time you're born, they're almost completely gone. A couple of years afterwards, they are certainly completely gone. No trace left.
Well, they did good work.
Well, again, we're describing all this as if it went perfectly. All right, things get larger. So now, that first method of migrating neurons isn't going to work. They can't reach where they want to go anymore that way. So there are some glial cells that do what the neurons did at first. They grow out part of their cell body. Mm-hmm. And attached to the wall of the vesicle where the brain is growing. Mm-hmm. But they do not drag their nucleus across. It stays in the progenitor zone where they were first born. But that long process, that protuberance, becomes a pathway for neurons and other glial cells to migrate along.
Okay, cool.
And remember that pre-plate, sub-plate, marginal zone, especially the marginal zone, the neurons there are producing a substance that is a stop signal.
Okay.
So as the neurons approach that that temporary layer, they go, oh, okay, I'm home.
Yeah. It's cool.
Now, this part is interesting. Your neocortex is generally a six-layered structure.
Okay.
Which is unusual, I think. I'm not sure if it's just humans or if some of the other primates have it, but most mammals have a four-layer cortex. And there are parts of our brain that have four layers. But we got this six-layer thing. And as the neurons are migrating and stopping, it sort of forms inside out, so that the deepest layer happens first. And you can see this, that first layer gets there, and they hang out. The next bunch of neurons to come along don't really see the stop signal until they get past the first layer.
Okay. Why didn't you tell us?
And you end up with that six-layer structure. Once these neurons get where they're going, in reaction to the stop signal and other chemical cues, they start producing other transcription factors, trying to tell each other where they are and what kind of neuron they should be.
Okay.
For example, we've got something called EMX2 and PAX6.
Yes. Okay. Cool.
PAX6, for example, is produced mostly in the front and sides of the brain. And it forms sort of a chemical gradient. The other one does the opposite. It's most dense towards the middle and back of the brain. Neurons are receiving these things and taking them in and binding them to their DNA. And it's the amount and relative amounts of these two that help the neurons figure out what kind of neuron to be. So, for example, in the front of the brain, where it's mostly PAX6, they turn into motor neurons. In the back of the brain, where it's mostly the other, you get neurons appropriate for the visual cortex. And in the middle, you get the somatosensory cortex, the part that takes incoming signals and information about how your body is positioned.
You said in the front of the brain, it had to do with motor stuff. I thought the little brain underneath the big brain, what's it called? Cerebellum?
Ah, that actually is Latin for little brain.
Okay. Yeah, I thought that was our motor center.
That's, that takes signals from your motor cortex. If the cerebellum is damaged or removed from an animal, the animal is not incapable of any particular thing. What it loses is grace and fine coordination. So once they're in place, they need to connect to each other. So you're going to get your dendrites and your axons. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, dendrites are rather short.
Yeah, comparatively.
Comparatively. The axons are the long ones. They can go all the way from one end of the brain to the other, or they can meet up with cells that are much closer. Now bear in mind that the axon has nothing to do with the elongated part of the neuron that first grew out to help those first neurons get where they were going.
Yeah, I was wondering.
The dendrites have happened, and the axons on their end have something called a growth cone.
Interesting name.
Well, it helps it grow. So all over that growth cone are a bunch of different receptors, and there are substances being produced that either repel or attract the growth cone. Okay. So if it receives some chemical on the bottom that says, don't go anywhere near me, it will start to curve upward. If it received a signal on the bottom that says, hey, come to me.
You are my only one.
Then it will bend down. But it's not a simple process. Mm. You take the corpus callosum, for example, the largest connection between the left and right hemispheres. Okay. If you're way over on the left, and you need to send an axon through the corpus callosum to connect to something way over on the right. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a chemical being produced in the main fissure between the hemispheres. And at first, you want to move towards that. Mm-hmm. But once you've passed the midline, you want to move away from that. So there are some chemical cues that say, hey, run away instead of go towards now. Sometimes just a different transcription factor gets activated and changes the neuron's behavior. It's actually fairly complicated and not entirely understood.
Well, yeah, this whole thing is complicated. Sounds like a chemical storm.
But once the growth cone reaches its target neuron, it will form a little synapse.
Ah.
And how does it know exactly which cell to go to? Well, it doesn't know exactly which one to go to. At first, to handle that problem, it seems to overdo it. When you are born, you have many more axons and many more connections between your neurons than you will later in life.
over here, might need this.
Yep, and then we get into synaptic pruning. When you are born, your brain is about a quarter of the weight it will be in adulthood.
Okay.
By age 6, it's 90% of the weight it will be. Brain development in humans keeps going after birth. Mm-hmm. Significantly, there's a great increase in volume. Most of that is the growth of dendrites and axons. And a lot of the cells die.
Oh,
now this is on purpose, because there are too many. And these are neurotropic factors, they call them, chemicals. They're like hormones, except they're very specific. They're produced at specific times to encourage or discourage specific types of neurons in specific places. And it seems to be a semi-competitive process. Those neurons that make a good connection will take up these neurotropic factors and live. Those that fail to make good connections die off. These are activity-dependent mechanisms. After birth, things change, and your senses become very important. In fact, premature babies often lag in brain size for their age. Even if you allow for, well, say you were, I don't know, a month early, right? 3 months later, you're still behind a two-month-old that wasn't born prematurely. Because you're getting the sensory cues, which causes chemical cascades that say that that just wire it up without information coming in stage is over.
Oh. So you missed out on a whole month of...
Yeah, you missed out on a month of cooking that you really needed.
Well, that doesn't bode well for... Anyways.
Well, you see, there is an amazing amount of compensation our brains are capable of. Newborn children, I think up to age two, an entire hemisphere can be damaged or completely removed. And we can adapt. At that early age, if you or I lost a hemisphere, we'd probably just die.
Yeah. Go babies.
Go babies. Those activity-dependent mechanisms are also complicated. And outside of the range of this episode, I think we have covered enough for one episode.
Yeah.
I think, not sure where to go next. There are different brain regions to look at. There's the six-layered structures to look at. There's the role of the glial cells and the different types. Like I said, I'm not sure where we're going next. But it's not going to happen next week, because our recording time would be on Halloween, which is just asking for trouble. So we'll be back in a couple of weeks, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.